Hey everybody, and thanks for coming back to Serial Zombie Mom. Today's episode is just going to be a little bit shorter, probably. Still kind of an interesting one, but probably a shorter episode than my normal, you know, hour-ish episodes. So I'm going to talk about the Japanese cannibal. You know, I heard a little bit about him over the years, but never really understood that he was a big deal, and never knew his name. Now, and I can't guarantee that I'm saying his name correctly, because obviously I don't speak Japanese. So Issei Sagawa, I think that's how you say it, was born April 26th of 1949 in Kobe, Hyogo Prefecture of Japan, to some pretty wealthy parents, actually. His father was a businessman and president of the Kuita Water Industries, and his father was actually an editor. I did have the name, I cannot say the place that his grandfather was an editor, but obviously, you know, good business and smarts, you know, followed through with this family. Now, Issei was born pretty prematurely and actually suffered from enteritis for a little while, which is a inflammation of the intestines. So eventually, you know, they treated him, he recovered from it, but he had a pretty fragile health, and a fragile personality. He was very, very introverted and very to himself, and kind of had to find a different way to express himself. He found a huge love for literature. He loved to read. He loved, you know, soaking in all this extra information as he read, and had reportedly started having some cannibalistic issues from a pretty young age. What we find is that he says on his own account that when he was in the first grade, he had reportedly seen a men's thigh and initially started thinking he wanted to bite into it. Like, really kind of strange, especially so young to be thinking in such a kind of scary way. Now, in an interview, he actually explains that he partook in bestiality with his dog and experienced cannibalistic desires for women prior to his attendance in university, where he actually completed a master's degree in English Lit. Now, at 24, while attending this university, he followed a tall German woman home, broke into her apartment while she was sleeping. Now, what he had intended to do initially was actually cannibalize her, slice off a part of her buttocks, and sneak away, as if she wasn't going to notice that her ass cheek was gone. So, I mean, I guess he didn't think it through very well about, you know, how he was going to overcome her, how he was going to do this, and, you know, did he intend to kill her? Like, he never really said there. He just intended to take a piece and go. Now, what bothers me about all this shit is, obviously, he had a lot of fucking issues. Now, where he got the ideas for the cannibalism, where he got the ideas for the bestiality, you know, there's really no telling. But I have a huge problem with that. I mean, we hear about these really fucked up things where people do sexual things to their animals. That's fucked up. I'm sorry. I don't give a fuck who you are. That's not a community that I ever want to hear anybody being okay. That's just fucking gross. So anyway, he did all this. He intended to do this to this German woman, but when he got there and started to touch her, she woke up, she overcame him and pushed him to the ground. He was captured pretty quickly after this and charged with attempted rape. He never confessed what he really planned to do. That was something that he wound up writing in his memoirs later on. And now everybody's like, holy shit, I bet that woman now knows that, oh my God, he was planning on, cannibalizing me. Now, his father went and paid a settlement to the victim, causing these charges to be dropped. Obviously, he didn't succeed, so therefore, here, take this massive amount of money and, just forget about it. He fucked up. So she's like, all right, well, no harm done. I'm okay, so therefore, yeah, I'm a little bit scared that something like this would happen to me, but I can deal with that for X amount of money. Now, at 27, he moves to France to get his PhD in literature and states that almost every single freaking night he was picking up a prostitute and taking her home. But it wasn't just to get his kicks. It wasn't just to get off, or at least not sexually. Like, he was hoping to shoot them and cannibalize them. The unfortunate thing was, he was a little chicken shit who couldn't pull the trigger when he aimed a gun at their head. So then they'd go and he'd pick up another girl the next night, hoping to be able to do it, and never had the fucking balls to do it. Now, on June 11th of 1981, at 32 years old, here he is. He's in classes for his PhD, and he has this classmate. Her name is Renee Hartevelt, or Hartvelt. She was a Dutch woman that was also, in some of his classes. And he's like, hey, come to my apartment. We'll have some dinner and we'll translate this poetry from for this assignment we've got to do. And he says, just come, we'll do all this. I'll have you read it out. We'll translate it from, your native Dutch to English, to Japanese, to French, whatever. We'll do this. So she's like, sure, whatever, come to your place. It'll be a lot quieter. We'll just get this done and then I'll go home. He plans immediately to kill her and eat her. She was a very healthy woman. She was very, very beautiful. And he felt, I'm weak, I'm small, I'm ugly, and I want her health, her beauty, her strength. So I'm going to take that energy in when I consume her. Now, this is believed in some other communities and some of the cannibalistic communities when you do some of the research. And I'm going to talk just a little bit about cannibalism on its own at the end of the episode. But, a lot of different places believed that, whatever you ingested became a part of you. So whether it was other people, whether it was their strength, and I think there was even something about Dahmer that, he had a weak biceps, so he ate somebody's biceps expecting his to get better or something along those lines. It's I'll have to get to that when we do Dahmer, but it was something along those lines about certain muscles that were ingested and things like that. So it's kind of interesting. So anyway, Renee shows up. She starts reading poetry. He actually even sets a little tape recorder to listen to her read. And he says, well, this way, if I miss anything, I can go back later and make sure that I heard you correctly and I can play it back and whatever. So she's like, whatever, whatever you want to do. So they have dinner. They read this out, like they talk for a little while. She reads, and as she's reading, he shoots her in the neck with a rifle. He says that he was so shocked by being able to finally do this, as he's failed so many times with prostitutes in the past, that he faints from the shock. Now, there's no real timeline about how long it actually took for him to come to after that. But when he did, he's like, hey, well, she's soft and supple. She's here. And so he has sex with her and has his necrophilia. But when he tries to bite into her flesh, he realizes, my teeth aren't sharp enough for this. This is taking a lot more effort than I thought it was going to take. So he leaves and goes and buys a butcher knife and comes back. Now, I'll read a little section here about his recollection of all this from his book that he wrote, called Into the Fog. Now, it, I believe, is in Japanese, so I'm not sure if you can find it in English. I haven't looked, but I do have some excerpts here that I was able to find. So, I just want to give you a trigger warning. It can get a little rough, okay? So, this is from his account. So, he says, while Renee recited the poem in her native language, he came up behind her with his rifle, shot her in the back of the neck. She fell off the chair. He continued to talk to her, but she failed to answer. He was surprised of how quiet it was. Then he noticed the amount of blood that flowed out of her wound. At first he attempted to clean it up, and he finally gave up. Now this doesn't really talk about him passing out, but he does mention this at some point. This is not in the book, though. I think he wanted to show himself as being stronger than that, so I think that he left that part out. Now, he then undressed her, finding it difficult to remove clothing from a corpse, but he was pleased that now she could no longer refuse his advances. She belonged to him. Then he got a knife and used it to cut off the tip of her left breast and a piece of her nose. He then consumed these. I touched her lip, or her hip, excuse me. He later wrote in Into the Fog, and wondered where I should bite first. He chose her right buttock, but found it difficult to bite into, and then he realized he had a bit of a headache. He then went on to describe moment by moment the appearance of her fat and muscle and the taste of it. As fat oozed out of one stab wound, he said that it had the consistency and appearance of yellow corn. He smelled it and found that it had no odor. Cutting deeper in to find the flesh, he placed a chunk into his mouth. And he says, it melted in my mouth like raw tuna in a sushi restaurant. I love sushi. And this just kind of fucked my taste for tuna. Or at least for the time being. I mean, I'm probably never gonna eat a piece of tuna again without thinking about this. Now, to him, there was nothing more delicious. And he looked into Renee's dead eyes and told her this. He was ecstatic now that he had indulged himself in his fantasy. He had this gorgeous body all to himself. And I'm going to say, she was a beautiful girl. A really, really beautiful girl. And I will post a picture of her. I have access. I've seen some of the pictures of her post-mortem. And obviously, it does not look like the same person. It's really disturbing to know exactly what he did to her, and she was an absolutely beautiful girl. I will share her picture. So it had taken him until the age of 32 to consummate his desires, but he had finally done it. Then he got serious. Another trigger warning here. This is where it's going to get a heck of a lot more detailed into what he did. He used an electric carving knife and began to cut her into parts. He laid out strips of flesh to store for later and nibbled on a few pieces raw. Then he made a quick meal of fried human flesh with mustard. He took photographs of the mutilated corpse and then had sex with it again. When I hug her, he recorded, she lets out a breath. And he told her that he loved her. As he cooked and ate more of her remains, he listened to the recording that he had made of her reading the poem. I guess that was a way to kind of keep her alive, a way of seeming as if she was there, a way of her sort of reciprocating his thoughts to her. I don't know. But when he was finished, he would use her underwear as a napkin to wipe her mouth, or wipe his mouth. He would then return to her body, cut off a breast, and baked it. When he tried to eat this, though, he didn't like it, because it had a very, very greasy consistency. I mean, you've got to look at breasts being a lot of fatty tissue and a lot of breast tissue, so it's going to be a little different than if you just cut off a big chunk of muscle. He found that he preferred her thighs. Now, when he finally felt exhausted, he took what was left of the corpse, and put it into his bed to sleep with it. Now, he knew at this point that in the morning, he was going to have to prepare to get rid of the evidence. He knew, I'm not going to be able to keep her here forever. She's going to get rancid. I got to do something. So the next day, finding that the body did not yet smell, he continued to try parts of it. In particular, the arm that had also fascinated him. He chewed on it all the way from the underarm to the elbow. He wrote, I had no idea that it would taste so good. Now, he was curious about a few body parts that seemed a bit more repulsive. He hesitated over what to do, but decided to go ahead and indulge. This part's a little rough, okay? Cutting out the anus, he put it in his mouth, but the smell overpowered him, and he spit it out. He tried frying it, but that failed to diminish the odor. So he gave up and returned to the body. Now, by this time, several large swarms of flies started to come around the corpse. So he took that as a sign that he'd finally lost her. She's finally gone. That and the honeymoon's over. You know, it's all done. Like, I can't keep doing this. You know, she's not fresh anymore. So at this point, he uses a hatchet, chops her into pieces. Small enough that he could put her in a suitcase, or a couple of suitcases, that he had actually purchased specifically for the body disposal. Now, even as he dismembered her, he grew excited. So excited, in fact, that he would use her hand for his own self-gratification and masturbation. He then chewed on her nose and heard the noise of the cartilage crunching. Since he'd often thought about chewing on her lip, he removed it and set it aside. That part he would keep for later pleasures. I want her tongue, he said in his account. I can't open her lower jaw, but I can reach in between her teeth. Finally, it comes out. Now he cut it off, popped it into his mouth, and watched himself chewing it in a mirror. This is when he went for the eyes. The final step for Sagawa was to explore her internal organs, which stung his hands with her digestive acid, and then used the hatchet to cut off her head. Now, with so many parts removed, it looked like a skull. He grabbed her hair, hung the head in front of him. An experience that actually caused him to say, "I realized I'm a cannibal." Now, by the time he was finished bagging up all the pieces and locking them into a suitcase, it was midnight of the second day. So he called a cab. Arriving at the, and I apologize if I butcher this, the Bois de Boulogne, he lugged the suitcases into the park, intended to shove them into a pond. However, he had a very, very difficult time because these were a lot heavier than he thought they were going to be. Now, when he spotted some people watching him, he got scared and just dropped and left the suitcases. In something called Cannibal Killers, they say that a couple went closer and saw a female hand protruding from one of the bloodstained cases, and so therefore they called the police. In a sense, he was caught red-handed, but he was able to get away. Like, they saw a small man drop these suitcases, and they knew that. They knew at least he was a small person. Now, police open the suitcases, and they find the remains, and begin the task of tracing the bags back to the purchaser. I mean, this was 81. This was a couple years before I was born, so they already knew some stuff. They knew how to track some of this stuff. Now, in the meantime, he returned to his apartment and enjoyed some of the pieces that he had put into the refrigerator. As he ate another gruesome meal, he thumbed through some porn. Now, each day of his remaining freedom, he ate piece by piece, claiming that her flesh and her muscle and everything as it started to deteriorate got sweeter over time. Essentially, the flesh and the meat was aging. It's like when we age a piece of meat for a restaurant and it gets sweeter over time. It gets to be a softer piece of meat because the muscles are breaking down. Now, he consumed various parts of her body, eating most of her breast, her face, either cooked or raw, saving other parts in the fridge. Now, he also took photos at each stage before he disposed of her body, okay? He was caught and arrested about 4 days after he tried to dispose of her. His rich father obviously provided a lawyer for the defense, and after 2 years, he was found legally insane and unfit to stand trial by a French judge who ordered him to be held in a mental institution. So this was 1983, by the time they say he's insane. Now, a Japanese author wrote his account in a book, as I said earlier, titled Into the Fog. Now, due to this, authorities deported him to Japan, where he was put into Matsuzawa Hospital in Tokyo. Excuse me. These psychologists found him sane and found that he just had sexual perversions that were his sole motivation for the murder. That was his MO. He wanted to get his sexual kicks off of doing all this. And he did. Now, the charges in France were dropped. He murdered a woman, consumed her, and these charges were dropped. Documents were sealed and not released to Japanese authorities, but since he was not allowed to be detained in Japan, he checked himself out of the fucking hospital on August 12th of 1986. He has been free since that day. Now, between 1986 and 1997, so through a 11-year period, he's frequently invited to be a guest speaker, commentator, and in 1992 actually appeared in a film that the title translates to Unfaithful Wife, Shameful Torture. And he's a sadosexual voyeur. So you can actually see him and hear him. He's written books about the murder that he committed, as well as a book on the 1997 Kobe child murders, as well as restaurant reviews that went into a magazine, apparently. And he struggled to find real employment, which I wouldn't have fucking hired him. Like, they know he's a cannibal. They know that he did this crime. It's not like it's hidden. He admits that he fucking did this. It's not like it's somebody who said, no, you know, I didn't do this. They're just stating that I did. You know, even people who've been caught red-handed will be like, no, I didn't do all that. But with this, they know that's what he fucking did. Now, in 2005, his parents had died, and he was prevented from attending their funeral. From here, he was moved into public housing and put on welfare. His parents must not have left him shit, and I don't fucking blame him. Now, in 2013, he was hospitalized with a cerebral infarction, which damaged his nervous system. Now, he lives alone. He needs assistance each day. And this assistance is provided by medical caregivers as well as a younger brother. Now, really quickly, I just want to talk about cannibalism in general and how some of that kind of pertained to him. Now, cannibalism is the consumption of human flesh by another human, obviously. It's been practiced in many cultures, generally as some sort of a ritual. Now, I will say the Aztecs in Mexico sacrificed and then ate thousands of people every year in a way to supposedly please the gods. And other cultures, such as the Aborigines of Australia, used to practice in order to incorporate the power of their enemies. The natives of the Fuji Islands simply just like the taste. They did it because it was meat. It was good to them. That was just what they liked. And then people such as the Donner-led settlers in 1846 dined off of the others in order to survive because of the rugged conditions of the Sierra Nevadas. Now, I can understand if people are desperate and they know that they're about to die if they do not eat something. I totally get that. Would I do it? I mean, I think everybody, if faced with that, would probably give in if they knew that they were going to die. But some of these, it's like I mentioned earlier, you know, the Aborigines wanted to pull in the power of the people they were eating. Now, there are different forms of cannibalism, okay? So, anthropophagy. That's another, and that's practiced for different reasons. Now, omophagia is a symbolic ritual meant to preserve the life force of the deceased by transforming the physical substance of the body into something spiritual. That may be done as a part of a deity worship or as a way to honor the dead relatives. Now, it may also be done to starve off widespread starvation, such as The widespread consumption of human flesh that occurred in the early part of the century in both China and Russia. This is mentioned by Andrei Chikatilo as an influence on his own hunger. And trust me, we'll talk about him later. He is on my list for sure. Now, some killers have adopted a form of omophagia, which is called zoophagia, which means it's a means of possessing their victim, okay? Zoophagia is the consumption of life form as seen as in a character or of Renfield in Dracula. So if you've read Dracula, you know Renfield would do these things. He would eat everything from spiders to flies to birds to cats as a way to improve on his own life. The idea was to ingest increasingly sophisticated life forms as a way to improve his own. Now then, of course, we also talk about those who do this as a sexual fetish. For many killers, cannibalism is erotic. It's a sexual fetish. Now, for example, Albert Fish claimed that if he ate the parts of his victim, he would grow increasingly excited and sometimes even orgasm just from eating the flesh. Again, I will talk about Albert Fish eventually. Richard von Krafft-Ebing published Psychopathia Sexualis in 1886. Now, this lists over 200 cases of aggressive eroticism, which involved some forms of cannibalism. Now, he described a man named Tersh, who was a 55-year-old man, who came across a woman in the woods in 1864 and strangled her. Then he cut off her breasts and her genitalia and took them home to cook and eat. When he was arrested, he said that his motive was actually just inner impulse. Now, another case involved a 24-year-old vine dresser who murdered a girl, tore out her heart, and consumed part of it. Krafft-Ebing's views of these cases were that they were driven by a perverted lust that forms into a desire to possess by consumption rather than sexual intercourse. Now, making a living person into an inanimate object is about power and control. Now, in cannibalism and vampirism, in paranoid schizophrenia, four psychiatrists offer a discussion in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry on an unusual case. The person was born in a rural part of France in 1940. He was 31 before he was diagnosed as a schizophrenic. 9 years later, he killed an elderly man, devoured part of his thigh, and drank blood from an artery. Then he murdered a married couple and was arrested. He confessed to having killed his wife, and then said he'd eaten parts of bodies to bring God back into his life. It was a form of a holy communion. As we hear, you know, sentiments of Jesus saying, consume my body, consume my blood, you know, whatever. This was his form of doing this. Now, this also is kind of consistent with Sigmund Freud's interpretation of cannibalism as appropriating the power of another person. Now, it seems that cannibalism may be more basic to our lives than one might be aware, and more than we want to believe. Now, Sagawa, who clearly had sexualized lust, told a British journalist that his compulsion for cannibalism probably came from a childhood dream that he had had that had left a very huge impression. This dream, he says, that he was in a boiling pot with his brother being prepared for a meal for someone else. Now, from that point on, he began to fantasize regularly about cannibalism, switching his role from the disempowered meal to the empowered consumer. Yet he wasn't interested in ingesting the girls of his own race. He envisioned eating large blonde women with white skin. And for him, the possibility of being intimate with them, and intimate in this way, was highly erotic. Now, after his first breaking and entering incident in Tokyo, he actually went to a psychiatrist to confess these dark desires. Now, the man believed that Sagawa was very highly dangerous, probably because he had begun to act out on the fantasies, but his father, this rich father of his, managed to engineer a cover-up story and then sent his son out of the country to another school. He figured, I'll get him the fuck out of here. Let me get his ass out of Japan, get him out of here, and whatever he does somewhere else is not my fucking business. It's not my issue. The mental health professionals who evaluated him later also saw very dangerous tendencies in him, from psychosis to psychopathy. Yet in the end, none of their fucking diagnosis mattered. It didn't matter what they said about him, because they dropped the charges in France because he went back to damn Japan. They talk to him there and they glorify his ass. They glorify him as a celebrity. He's going all over the place. He's doing this. He's doing that. And he's let to walk free. You cannot help but to wonder what else he did. Now, they're saying that, no, he got out his fantasy with this girl and never did this again. But I find that really hard to believe. So here we are. So many years later, it's been 40 plus years. And he didn't do it again? Bullshit! We see videos of him pretending to eat people. Like, we've seen... come on. We don't know for sure. Now, at this point, as far as I know, he is still alive. Let me double check really quick. Yeah, as far as I can find, he is 72 years old now. And as far as we know, still alive. Nothing has changed since I started my research. It shows stuff about his parents. It shows that, he has a brother. It shows, but I mean, this is one fucked individual. All right. Absolutely fucked. He was this petite little guy. I mean, you can see some of these shots of him alongside attorneys and everything. And he is tiny. So I'll pick a couple of these pictures really quick. Put them up on the Facebook page, on the Instagram. I'm not going to post the pictures of her body. I will post a picture of her. I post a picture of him. I will post a picture of the flesh that was laid out. But without knowing exactly what it was, you wouldn't know, without me telling you this is pieces of her body, you wouldn't know. So just keep that in mind when you listen and when you go back and look. I am going to say, this is the muscle, the things from the fridge. There are places, if you want to see a little bit more, and if you're as curious and gruesome as I am, you can go to truecrimemagazine.com. Like, you can go to their website for True Crime Magazine. And there is a place where you can see, and you can actually see what he did to her body. You can actually see her body. It's fucked up. But that's probably one of my favorite websites to go to for this kind of shit. So, you know, it's not as bad as Rotten.com was back in the day. And there's a couple of different websites that I'll probably share over time that I've somehow come across because I'm one sick and twisted individual myself. But I hope you guys enjoyed this one. This one was a little more concise. It was not quite as long. I'm still kind of pushing the 45-minute kind of area. But if there's any more information or if anybody's gotten a chance to read Into the Fog, or maybe when I get a chance to read that, I may come back and add to the episode or do a follow-up. So if anybody's interested, let me know. Just email me at serialzombiemoms@gmail.com. You can message me on the Facebook group or on Instagram on the post. I'll be more than happy to, you know, I know I say this in every episode, but I'll be more than happy to discuss things in more detail and in general with you. So that's it on this one. I do have another big case coming. It's not going to be as big as Marilyn Monroe, but I feel like I need to do 3 episodes on this one, but I think I might be able to do it all in 2. So, I don't know, but it's a pretty big one, and it's got a lot of information. It's got a lot of stuff that happened with that one. So, I hope you guys are as excited about that one as I am, because that one is definitely, easiest way for me to say, like, there's celebrities involved, there's a lot going on as far as when it comes to the people prosecuted in this case. So, anyway, enough on that, and I hope you guys enjoyed, and I will see you on the next one.